Hello, this is Beatrice Pavia with part one of the Pantograph of Friday, March 28, 2025. We begin with page one, where the main story is about Women's History Month, titled Setting Children Up for Success, Montessori School led by mom, daughter, and daughter-in-law. This story is datelined Bloomington. For mother-daughter duo Barb Roach and Amy Moser, opening Montessori Children's Center in 1997 was a dream come true. Broach's daughter-in-law, Rachel Broach, joined the business in 1999, and now the school at 3 Yount Drive in Bloomington is celebrating 28 years of operation. An added benefit of running the family-owned business, it's brought the three women even closer together, they said. Montessori Children's Center is one of several women-owned businesses the Pantograph is featuring this month in recognition of Women's History Month. Moser said ever since she was young, she knew she wanted to follow in her mother's footsteps and become a teacher. "Mom, someday we're going to open a school, just us," Barb Broach recalled her daughter telling her. At the time, Barb didn't think much of it. Barb said she was inspired to become a teacher when her son was involved in a co-op in town. While volunteering with her son's program, she realized how much she loved working with young children. Then, when both of her children were old enough to be in school, she saw a blind ad in the Pantograph from someone looking for a preschool teacher. "I didn't even know what school it was for, but I sent in my resume to the Pantograph," Barb said. A couple of days later, she received a call to meet for an interview with the Montessori School of Bloomington Normal. She was offered a job and accepted it. She began learning about the Montessori teaching method through this job and decided she wanted to continue her education with a certificate in teaching. In 1988, Barb completed her Montessori teacher training from the St. Nicholas Training Center for the Montessori Method of Education. The center is based in London, and she took her courses through distance learning lessons with help from tutors in the United States. By the time the Montessori School of Bloomington Normal closed in the late 1980s or early 90s, Barb had 15 years of teaching under her belt, but said she knew she was not done. By then, Moser was in her junior year at Millikan University in Decatur, where she was studying elementary education. She told her mother, "We better get busy if we're going to open a Montessori school." I said, "You were serious?" And she said, "Mom, have I not said that all of my life?" And yes, she had, Barb said with a laugh. Moser graduated from Millikan in 1997 and attained her Montessori certification in 2000 from the same school as her mother. With help from Barb's husband and Moser's dad, Jim Broach, the women found a space for their school at 12 Westport Court in Bloomington. It had previously been a dance studio with two large rooms that the women converted into classrooms. Montessori Children's Center opened with 14 students in March 1997. By that August, enrollment had skyrocketed to its capacity of 40 students, Barb said. 2 years later, Rachel Broach, who had married Barb Broach's son, Jim Broach, moved back to the Bloomington Normal area from Memphis, Tennessee, and asked to join the mother-daughter team. "It just seemed right," Rachel said. 3, 4, and 5-year-olds, I just love them." Rachel said she'd had a glimpse into the world of teaching from a young age, as she had known Barb since she was a teenager. Rachel graduated from Eastern Illinois University in 1995 and earned her Montessori certification in 2003, also from St. Nicholas Training Center for the Montessori Method of Education. Montessori Children's Center has had 3 different locations over the years and moved to its current location on Yount Drive in 2004. It currently has 60 students enrolled. Montessori, a teaching method named after its founder, Dr. Maria Montessori, emphasizes self-directed learning through hands-on activities. The method includes toys with built-in correction of error, which the teachers refer to as work because the kids are learning instead of just playing with the toys. The brooches further describe the toys as puzzles that help children see and feel where they have made an error and then self-correct. Through this method, the brooches said they believe children build confidence and a love for learning. You might be a visual learner. Someone else might need to be hands-on to touch and feel. I need to hear. Maria Montessori incorporated as many of the senses in each one of her toys so that you would be able to learn the way you could learn the easiest, Barb said. We set children up for success. The tools also are designed to help the development of fine motor skills and practical life skills, such as buttoning and snapping, Barb said. Adults like to do things for children, and I understand it's quicker and easier, but this is how you can start teaching those skills early on, Rachel said. Montessori Children's Center is for kids ages 3 to 5 and offers full-day programs in either 2, 3, or 5 days of the week. The school has mixed-age classrooms, which Barb said allows children to mentor one another through peer-to-peer learning and also fosters socialization and encourages older children to show leadership skills. Barb and Rachel said they love working with their family, adding that it provides an opportunity for them to grow even closer. We have such a respect and we listen to each other, Barb said. Added Rachel, everyone has their own life story, and this happens to be ours. To learn more about the school, visit MontessoriChildren.net or call 309-663-8736. We turn back to page 1 for our next story about the U.S. government titled Social Security to Ease ID Rules After Backlash, Fewer Need to Apply in Person. This is an Associated Press story, datelined Washington. The Social Security Administration partially backtracked this week on a plan that would require all new and existing beneficiaries to travel to a Social Security field office to verify their identity. The Social Security Administration said Wednesday that people applying for Social Security disability insurance, Medicare, or supplemental security income who are not able to use agency's online portal can complete their claim over the phone instead of in person. Other SSA applicants still will be required to verify their identities at a field office. The changes will apply beginning April 14th instead of the previously announced date of March 31st. We have listened to our customers, Congress, advocates, and others, and we are updating our policy to provide better customer service to the country's most vulnerable population, said Lee Dudek, SSA's acting commissioner of Social Security, in a statement. Dudek added that delaying the policy start date will help officials train employees on new procedures. Last week, SSA announced a plan to require in-person identity checks for millions of new and existing recipients while simultaneously closing 47 field offices in 18 states. The new requirements would have impacted anyone who needed to verify their bank information, as well as families with children who receive Social Security benefits and cannot verify certain information online. The changes are intended to combat fraud and waste within the system, which President Donald Trump and officials in his administration claim are widespread. The policy change sparked furor among lawmakers, advocacy groups, and program recipients who say the Trump administration is placing unnecessary barriers in front of an already vulnerable population. AARP's Chief Advocacy and Engagement Officer Nancy LeMond said the Wednesday announcement is a good first step by the Social Security Administration to respond to the concerns of AARP, our members, and older Americans everywhere about plans to discontinue phone service for critical Social Security customer service needs. Merely delaying the implementation of this change is not enough, though, she said. SSA should take a deliberate approach to its proposed changes to customer service that seeks public input, follows a clear communication plan, and allows a reasonable time frame for compliance. About 72.5 million people, including retirees and children, receive Social Security benefits. Trump's nominee to lead the SSA faced questions Tuesday at his confirmation hearing about efforts by Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency to close field offices and cut back on phone service at the beleaguered agency. Frank Bisignano, who was called to account for recent upheaval at the SSA, which took center stage in the debate over the usefulness of DOGE cuts to taxpayer services and their effect on the social welfare program, long regarded as the third rail of national politics. A Wall Street veteran and one-time defender of corporate policies to protect LGBTQ plus people from discrimination, Bisignano, since 2020, served as chairman of Fiserv, a payments and financial services tech firm. He told CNBC in February that he is fundamentally a DOGE person, but the objective is not to touch benefits. When asked during the hearing whether Social Security should be privatized, he responded, "I've never heard a word of it, and I have never thought about it." And our last front page story is about entertainment, titled "Mariachi Coming to ISU Stage." This story is datelined Normal. Alexis Pena began starting to learn the trumpet when he was 10 years old. Since then, the 25-year-old said his music journey has taken him to places I never thought I'd go. Pena is studying for his master's degree in music performance as a second-year graduate student at Illinois State University. On Sunday, the ISU School of Music student trumpeter will herald a not-often-heard performance in the Center for the Performing Arts Concert Hall. In addition to participating in the Wind Symphony, Pena is also a member of Mariacho Tesoro de Mexico, a Chicago-based mariachi band that will join the ISU Wind Symphony for a 4 p.m. Sunday performance titled La Fiesta Mexicana, a reimagining of a wind band classic. Pena said the ISU Music School's director of bands, Anthony Marinello, had occasionally asked him about working on a mariachi collaboration. In the fall, Pena had been with his current mariachi band for at least 4 months when Marinello told him, "I really want to do this." Pena agreed and facilitated the collaborative agreement between the bands with support from Marinello and a mariachi bandmate. "It was just a long time coming," Pena said. Marinello was also conductor of the Wind Symphony. In an email, he noted such a collaboration is a very rare experience at ISU. He said Pena and his band worked with the symphony on careful edits to various aspects of the music to enhance the listening experience while adding elements of authenticity. The director of bands also said Pena has been an absolute asset as we learn more about this music and the culture to which it belongs. "I am so proud to know Alexis and get to collaborate with him on this project, as well as learn more about his life and development as a musician of Mexican heritage," Marinello said. Pena said he joined the Mariacho Tesoro de Mexico band less than a year ago, after coming across an Instagram post of a mariachi trio performance of the Star Spangled Banner at a Chicago Bulls game. He reached out to the group and learned they had an opening for a trumpet player. After borrowing a friend's car, Pena said he drove up to the band and they clicked. "It's been a long road in Pena's music journey to reach this level of symphonic collaboration. He said he played in mariachi bands in middle school, high school, and a bit in college before joining this act. My middle school had just started their mariachi program. We didn't even have suits. We only wore white shirt and a moño, a bow tie, Pena recalled of his eighth grade mariachi concerts in Laredo, Texas. He said his current mariachi band includes violins, trumpets, vihuela, guitar, and guitarrón. The band members sing too. Pena said his band is missing a harp, however, and also has an opening for a trumpeter. Pena said full mariachi attire is heavily ornamented and uses lots of embroidery, which denotes a group's initials. He added professional mariachi bands love to play in different colors for different occasions. Every suit is different, Pena said, noting his band currently uses black suits with silver beads, or galas. Pena said his favorite kind of mariachi tunes to play are rancheras, which are the slowest pieces of music. They're about heartbreak, about love, and people just really love to sing, he said. He said his favorite part of mariachi performance is seeing audience members become engaged in the music. He said people really get into mariachi music at parties, but his band can also perform in more serious settings such as funerals. Sunday's concert will feature five tunes, with two ISU faculty playing in the symphony and a guest conductor. Pena will be playing with his mariachi band. The show will conclude with H. Owen Reed's composition, La Fiesta Mexicana. Pena said he attended his undergraduate at Texas A&M International University in Laredo, Texas. He had moved to Laredo from Mexico when he was 10 years old. When asked what brought him to Normal, Pena said he studied under a professor who had studied for their master's degree at ISU. One thing that separates ISU from many other universities, the professors have genuinely cared about your journey as a musician, he said. They'll be there for you. If you make it known that you need assistance, they are more than willing, more than happy to help you achieve your goals. To Pena, the Wind Symphony's new rendition of La Fiesta Mexicana is an example of that kind of achievement. We made it happen here, Pena said. To stay updated on Pena's mariachi band, follow them on Instagram at instagram.com/mariachitdm. And a little sidebar tells us that the concert is at 4 p.m. Sunday at Illinois State University Center for the Performing Arts. Student and faculty tickets are $8, seniors are $10, adults $15. They're available online at illinoisstatefinearts.revenue.net, in person at the CPA box office, or by calling 309-438-2535. And we turn now to some local and state news. This story is headlined, Raul joins motion to block dismantling of education department. This story is datelined Springfield. Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul and 20 other state attorneys general are asking a federal judge to immediately halt President Donald Trump's efforts to dismantle the U.S. Department of Education. In a motion filed Monday in U.S. District Court in Massachusetts, the coalition of Democratic attorneys general are seeking a preliminary injunction to block the mass firing of half of the agency's employees, which Trump ordered March 11th, as well as the transfer of student loan management and special education services to other federal agencies. States, including Illinois, are already feeling the impact of the Trump administration's attempts to dismantle the Department of Education, Raoul said in a statement late Monday. Enrollment deadlines for Illinois public community colleges and universities approach in just a few short weeks, and the turmoil caused by the administration's actions jeopardizes the futures of tens of thousands of Illinois students. The lawsuit was originally filed March 13th, 2 days after the administration announced plans to eliminate half the agency's workforce. The motion for a preliminary injunction, however, was prompted by Trump's March 20th executive order calling for the eventual closure of the department, as well as his announcement the following day, directing the Small Business Administration to take over processing of student loans, while the Department of Health and Human Services would take over responsibility for administering special education programs. Ultimately, the Department of Education's main function can and should be returned to the states, Trump said in the executive order. And for local news, we have a collage of photos headlined "Bison Thank the Bloomington Police." One of the captions reads, "Bloomington Bison Captain Eddie Matsushima talks with Bloomington Police Chief Jamal Symington on Wednesday at the Bloomington Police Department. Matsushima was given a tour of the department after delivering coffee and treats to show support for the police department." And the other photographs show the coffee and the treats and various members with the police. And this story is headlined, "Bloomington Normal Police Announce Campaign Results. Recent weekend sees 30 speeding citations and 6 DUIs. This story is Dateline Bloomington Normal. The Bloomington and Normal Police Departments issued a total of 30 speeding tickets during a traffic enforcement campaign St. Patrick's Day weekend. The departments released the results of the enforcement campaigns this week as part of a safety effort funded by federal highway safety funds administered by the Illinois Department of Transportation. During the holiday weekend, Bloomington police made 6 arrests for driving under the influence and issued 9 speeding citations. One of the people stopped for speeding was arrested for driving 87 miles per hour in a 45 mile per hour zone, according to the Bloomington Police Department. Normal police did not make any DUI arrests, but officers issued 49 other citations in 47 traffic stops, 22 seatbelt, 1 child passenger safety, 21 speeding, 1 distracted driving, and 4 other violations. Thanks to those officers who worked extra to focus on keeping our streets safe. Traffic enforcement and our educational focus aids in saving lives and preventing life-changing vehicle crashes," Bloomington Police Chief Jamal Symington said in a news release. "Although this campaign has ended, BPD remains committed to traffic safety, which is a quality of life matter that we take seriously." And this next story is headlined, "Poco a Poco Sampler Set for April 5th in Streeter." Streeter is in store for a day of mini concerts, visual arts, and sweet treats next month to help benefit a summer youth music festival. Poco a Poco will hold its 3rd annual sampler fundraiser from 3 to 4:30 p.m. April 5th at Park Presbyterian Church at 201 North Vermilion Street in Streeter. Featured artists include guitarist Asher Taylor Schroeder, vocalist Kate Tombaugh and Olivia Yedinick, pianist Kathy Tombaugh, organist Nancy Mueller, and quilter Jennifer Rexius. Tickets for this afternoon event are $100 and available at pocoapoco.org/events or by emailing info@pocoapoco.org. All proceeds will go toward the Poco a Poco Summer Music Fest. Attendees are encouraged to bring their questions about these instruments, the performers behind them, and the world of music, according to a news release from Poco a Poco organizers. Attendees will also be able to sample from a selection of desserts. From 6 to 8 p.m. April 5th, doors will open to the public for a free jam session by Taylor Schroeder. Instrumentalists of all ages and skills are welcome at the session. The flagship Poco a Poco Summer Music Fest returns June 7 through 14 for its 9th year. The festival offers training programs for young musicians and free music events. The 6-day training session for young musicians in grades 8 through 12 offers core lessons in voice, choir, piano, theory, and guitar. An introductory program is also available for students in 5th through 7th grade. For more information or to apply for the festival workshop, go to pocoapoco.org/learn-more. And this news brief is headlined DeWitt County Museum opening next week. The C.H. Moore Homestead and DeWitt County Museum at 219 East Woodlawn Street in Clinton is calling on history buffs, curious minds, avid thrifters, and more to experience its 2025 programming. A news statement from the museum said the season kicks off Tuesday with open hours set for 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday and 1 to 5 p.m. on Sundays. Admission is $10 for adults, $5 for people ages 6 to 18, and free for kids 5 and under. Programming this year includes two special presentations. The first will be given by Guy C. Fraker at 1:30 p.m. April 27th and is titled Abraham Lincoln and Ann Rutledge, Is the Story True? The second is Amber Borking Rutledge's August 3rd presentation, Honey Through the Ages, A Tasting Journey. The museum gift shop also has been revamped with new seasonal merchandise and store specials, the statement continued. For questions, you can call the museum at 217-935-6066. And Heartland Community College sets info night for April 9th. Heartland Community College will host a career and technical education information night from 5 to 6:30 p.m. Wednesday, April 9th. The event will be held in the Advanced Manufacturing Center on the main campus at 1500 West Rab Road in Normal. The event is an opportunity for students, parents, and other community members to learn about Heartland's college programs, scholarships, and facilities. Participants will be given an overview of over 30 career and technical education programs offered at Heartland, including business skills, electric vehicle technology, HVAC, industrial maintenance, computer networking, web design, and more, a news release said. Many of the programs include work-ready certifications, which can be completed in a year or less, according to the news release. Attendees can also view the labs, ask questions, and talk to faculty members. The event is free, but registration is required at heartland.edu or by calling 309-268-8058. And the Friends of Carlock Library are hosting a food drive leading up to Easter to gather donations for Midwest Food Bank in Normal. Beginning April 1st and running through April 19th, donors are encouraged to stop by the library at 202 East Washington Street in Carlock, just off of U.S. Route 150 west of Bloomington Normal. Non-perishables such as peanut butter and canned meats are requested, but cash donations are also welcome. The library's hours are 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Wednesday and Friday, and 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Saturdays. And this has been Beatrice Pavia with part one of the pantograph of March 28, 2025. I look forward to reading part two with you next.